From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right, like he doesn't crazy.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, studios are shuffling their top executives, canceling expensive projects, and turning their backs on A-list stars. What the hell is happening to the movie business? We'll talk to John Horn of the LA Times and Stephen Galloway of The Hollywood Reporter. But first on The Hollywood News Banter, it's the latest proof that the revolution is underway at the studios. It's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by The Business producer, Matt Holtzman. Matt, what's up?
So we're dedicating today's banter to stories that have something to do directly or indirectly with the larger show, which is about the changing movie business. All these stories are more indicators that changes are afoot. We're starting with the fact that Forbes has released its list of Hollywood's top actresses, their top earners list. And no surprise, Angelina Jolie is number one at $27 million last year. That's between June of 2008 and June of 2009.
The surprising, I guess, to me, surprising number two is Jennifer Aniston, who somehow, you know, she's in a lot of successful movies, and yet she doesn't come to people's lips as this big movie star.
Well, she earned $25 million last year, largely on the success of Marley and Me. I think just as much a surprise as that at number three is Meryl Streep, who made $24 million. Of course, you know, women are still bringing in much less than men across the board. But the connective tissue of this whole story is that Angelina Jolie may have been the top earner, but her recent movie, Changeling, didn't bring in very much money. And in fact, throughout the summer, star vehicles have not been bringing in money. Land of the Lost with Will Ferrell fell flat on his face. Year One with Jack Black and Michael Cera, that has fallen flat on its face.
Yeah, I think the trick now seems to be the right person in the right movie. So in a movie like Marley and Me, that works, you know, and something else, Jennifer Aniston is not necessarily luring people to the movie theaters.
So the question is, if Marley and Me would work, whether Jennifer Aniston was in it or not, why did she earn the money that she earned for being in it?
Now, if you change the dog in Marley and Me, you know, that would have destroyed it.
They made it a German Shepherd or something?
Yeah, a little teeny poodle.
Pitbull. All right.
A pitbull.
Elsewhere, following the abandonment of the Steven Soderbergh Brad Pitt baseball movie Moneyball at Sony, and they were already $10 million into that movie.
Which makes it very unusual.
Yeah, very unusual.
Such a late date.
Fox has also stopped one of their big pictures, Unstoppable.
Unstoppable stopped, yes. The Tony Scott and Denzel Washington action picture was supposed to start shooting in the fall, and apparently budget concerns have put a stop to that. And, you know, they just failed to do well with the taking of Pelham 123. And that's the type of movie, those are the type of stars and the type of star director that is going to be in the crosshairs. The studios will not shell out, forget $100 million. I don't think they're going to want to shell out, as we saw with Brad Pitt and Moneyball, even $50 million, unless it feels like this is a product that will deliver commercially. It's going to make studios even more risk-averse than they already were.
Producers are also in the crossfire, and that includes George Clooney, and that may be the reason that after a decade on the Warner's lot, Clooney and his partner Grant Heslov have moved their Smokehouse production shingle to Sony.
Yeah, and I find that amusing because Amy Pascal, the chairman of Sony, I'm sure she did not want to kill Steven Soderbergh's movie, but, you know, she showed that she was kind of getting the fiscal memo. But then along comes George Clooney, who is truly a poster boy for a movie star who can't open a movie, and she can't say no to him.
All right. Well, this is a man who's made some really tremendous movies, from Michael Clayton to Syriana to Good Night and Good Luck. But of course, none of them were big money makers. And right now, the studios are kind of putting those kinds of movies aside and say, we just got to focus on the bottom line.
Yeah, they just. And yet, here's George Clooney at Sony. And, you know, it's interesting because Warner had a reason to keep Clooney around if they can squeeze out like Ocean's 50 and 52 or whatever that's part of the Soderbergh, those ensemble movies, you know, that's why you would keep those guys around to keep that franchise going. But I guess at this point, there have been a lot of Oceans and they're just thinking that they can't do it anymore.
One ocean too far. Finally, the New York Post reports that NBC Universal CFO has been sent to Hollywood to oversee the studio's business.
Yes, and this is part of that loud drumbeat of coming change at Universal, and I'm possibly also at NBC, but at the Universal Film Studio, they have had a string of losers. Land of the Lost is the big notorious one, but also State of Play, Duplicity, and Public Enemies seems to be too expensive to make its money back. There's still question marks around Bruno.
Now, as I understand it, what happens at Universal is kind of weighing in the balance of how Public Enemies does.
Well, I think all of these movies, you know, but it is hard, as I wrote in the Daily Beast in a column last week, it's hard to understand how Michael Mann, who does not open movies, continues to command budgets in excess of $100 million and rich deals. I mean, yes, you put him together with Johnny Depp, and Johnny Depp is one of our few remaining movie stars. But the fact of the matter is that movie is an indulgent art house movie with a big studio popcorn movie budget, and that stuff is not going to work.
So what if everyone's wrong? If Public Enemies makes a ton of money, what happens then?
I will lose a bet, which would be very sad.
Most importantly.
Most importantly. But also, you know what? I can't entertain it because I don't believe it is possible.
Well, I guess we'll find out soon enough.
And that's all the news that's fit for bantering. Coming up next, is Transformers a summer blockbuster or a description of what's going on in the movie business? There's been some fascinating news coming from behind the studio gates recently. Paramount canned two top executives, and there are rumors that Universal might be facing an even bigger shakeup. As we mentioned in the banter, Sony shut down the Steven Soderbergh-Brad Pitt film Moneyball just days before cameras were going to roll. And Fox's Unstoppable has been stopped over money concerns. Are these simply signs of rough economic seas or a sea change in the film business? And what does it all mean for moviegoers? Joining us for analysis of the situation are two veteran show business journalists, John Horn of the LA Times and Stephen Galloway of The Hollywood Reporter. All three of us have been covering this industry for quite a while. And for me, I feel that we're on the brink of a shift at the studios. And I'd be curious, we'll start with Stephen. Are you feeling that kind of change coming on, or am I getting too excited?
I agree with you. It's very interesting that there's been this extraordinary period of stability with people in positions who've kept those jobs for a long time. And what defined this era that made it different from the previous era was it was very much the corporations running the studios. I think when we started writing about the business, there were these huge egos, larger-than-life characters, you know, Mark Canton, Peter Guber, John Peters,
Michael Eisner,
right.
Jeffrey Katzenberg.
All these larger-than-life characters, very flamboyant, who sort of like the old moguls operated from instinct, bullied, threatened. They were not necessarily nice people. They weren't safe people. We've all had them on the phone threatening our careers, lives, kids, you know. Harvey Weinstein, who is the most flamboyant of those characters, was also the most threatening, you know, having been in a hotel room with Harvey, threatening to kill me, maim me, wound me, toss me out the window, buy the newspaper so that he could fire me.
And that was just hello, right?
You were actually a room service waiter that you've been reporting on.
And what's interesting is that I loved that about them. And then the corporations...
We love that, yes.
Right.
What was it? The corporations decided the corporations, they need to manage them, or that their film stopped working?
Well, the corporations came in and they wanted people who were safer. They wanted people who knew how to operate numbers, who knew how to do a balance sheet. And they brought in people who were much easier to deal with, but who didn't stamp their studios with any defining character. The old MGM, the year of Louis B. Mayer, was very defined. It was the musicals. The old Warner Brothers was very defined as the place of the gangster films. Even under the Weinsteins and the Guber Peters, each studio had its own character. In the corporate era, that disappeared.
I would agree with it, but I also think what changed is that these studios all became parts of larger conglomerates, and the conglomerates looked for these divisions to produce reliable quarterly profits. And they watched them, not just the personalities, but they watched the numbers much more closely. And when the numbers didn't meet expectations, then they asked for change. So I think it was two things that happened simultaneously, but I really think it was the trying to manage profits, trying to predict profits, and trying to keep costs under control. So I think that led to a change of management, but I also think it changed the whole programming philosophy at the studios.
Yeah, well, if you look at the studios, you see, you know, Jim Giannopoulos and Tom Rothman, both lawyers, you know, there's a lot of that kind of management at these studios, right?
Or MBAs like Alan Horn, people who very much come from the legal, business, financial world as opposed to producers, you know, agents. Now, we are seeing a number of changes taking place. So what does that mean? Does it mean that the corporate era is ending in some way? Or does it mean that an even more corporate era is actually going to come in? It's hard to define what the single cause of change is. Multiple things are happening simultaneously. We're seeing the merger of two major agencies.
Right.
We're seeing Universal dealing with a very disappointing box office that may lead to change there. We're seeing shifts at Warner Brothers that may or may not happen. And each of these has a different cause. So it's very hard to know at this stage what the deep underlying shift is, if it really is an architectonic shift,
right,
or if it's just a change of personnel.
John, do you think it really is true that each of these has a different cause, or is that really looking more narrowly at it as opposed to more largely at it?
There's no certainty anymore. I mean, you look at this past summer, you look at the star vehicles from Russell Crowe to Will Ferrell, the big budget movies that have completely failed. I think that's what's gripping the town, is that nobody really knows what should work, what will work, what can't work. And for a while, for the last couple of years, the studios figured out that they would be kind of in the package delivery business, that they would take their distribution fees off movies that they might have financed, might have co-financed, but they would just kind of take the vig, and the outside money is starting to dry up, and even the fees that they were collecting from distribution are starting to go down. So I think you're seeing a fundamental shift in how the economics of the business work.
You know, there's been one sucker after another lined up in Hollywood. There was, you know, with the Sony and Matsushita era, it was the Japanese. And, you know, before that, we had Coca-Cola and Transamerica. And then we had a bunch of German money come into the industry. And it was supposed to be, I think we were all poised for the Indian money to come in by way of Steven Spielberg and DreamWorks getting money from Reliance. That money is still hung up for a very long time now, months and months and months past. Even Steven Spielberg doesn't have money. John?
Well, and the high net worth people are no longer as high net worth as they used to be. The hedge funds are obviously backing out of Hollywood. Some of them have taken a big bath. So I think what you're going to also see is generally that money had gone to the movies that the studios might necessarily not have wanted to make.
Right.
And those are the movies that most people who listen to this show want to go see. They're sophisticated adult dramas. They're smart movies. They have artistic ambition. And as the studio increasingly get out of that business and the private money that went into that business goes away, I think you're going to have a real void. You're going to have the big tentpole franchise Transformer movies. You're going to have the little smaller budgeted, independently financed art movies, and there's going to be a huge chasm in between.
I agree. I think what's the most interesting about this to people who are not in the business is, of course, how's it going to impact the movies that we see? And it's very interesting that a shift of one person to studio can have huge consequences. For instance, at Universal, if there is indeed the sort of change that people happen to be talking about at the moment, and if that change leads to, for instance, David Lindy leaving — David Lindy is joint head of Universal Pictures.
Co-chairman, right.
Lindy is the guy who's been the defender of Focus Features. Focus has made Milk, pictures like that. These are great quality films. What will it mean for one of the very few studio-financed companies that is in the specialty film business?
Right.
So the impact could be devastating to what we think of as quality film. I thought the worst news for people interested in that type of film is the success of the new Transformers.
Well, I think the message of Transformers, and I think the message of other movies that have done particularly well this summer — you could even put Hangover into that group — is that it's not about stars, it's about concept. And that the studios are increasingly gravitating towards understandable concepts, and they don't have to have big actors in them. They don't have to have, you know, pre-sold books or novels. They just have to be relatable, understandable ideas. And I think what you find studios doing increasingly is that when they're considering a movie, they're not just saying, is it a good idea or is it a bad idea? They're saying, what does the trailer look like? What does the one sheet look like? What is the specific audience that we're going to market this film to? I think all of those were considerations in the past, but I think they now dictate whether or not a film gets made. I mean, you could describe Hangover in 10 seconds to somebody who knew nothing about the movie business, and they would generally get it, and they might generally be interested in going to see it.
And I actually think the roots of this go way back to Jaws, if I remember right. That was the first major studio film that had a big television campaign with those 30-second commercials. So everything had to be clear in 30 seconds or less. And since then, we've seen the rise of concept filmmaking that's grown more and more powerful, that will grow more powerful as the stars diminish.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about big changes transforming the movie business with Stephen Galloway of The Hollywood Reporter and John Horn of The LA Times. What is the sudden death of the movie star? It seems, I mean, it's been, maybe it's not that sudden, but it seems like really now, there is maybe one movie star in the world or something.
That would be Will Smith, probably. That even in a really downer story like 7 Pounds was able to do well. I mean, I think the studios used to look for movie star vehicles, and they used to love the idea of a movie star and assume that a movie star could open a movie. What Sony did in the last couple of weeks by putting the movie Moneyball into turnaround, I think, was very typical.
Let's just stop and explain for a second.
Moneyball is based on a fantastic baseball book by Michael Lewis.
Right.
And Sony was days away from starting photography. The script was written by Steve Zaillian. It was going to be directed by Steven Soderbergh.
These are
Oscar
winners.
Schindler's
people,
List, Traffic,
right.
Aaron Brockovich, and who's going to star Brad Pitt.
Several million dollars in.
They were almost $10 million into this movie. Apparently, Steven Soderbergh did a revision of Steven Zaillian's script, brought it to Sony. Sony didn't really like the script, and then Soderbergh wanted to take the film in a slightly more non-narrative, experimental, Mike Lee style
Steven
of filmmaking.
Soderbergh.
It was going to cost close to $60 million. And so the studio at the – it wasn't even the 11th hour. The 11th hour and 59th minute said they weren't going to make the movie, and they gave two other studios a chance – Warner Brothers and Paramount, to pick up the movie over the weekend, and both of them refused. When a studio is saying no to a movie starring Brad Pitt, directed by Steven Soderbergh, you know that the town has changed, and you know that the way that decisions—
Especially when it's Sony, which was always the easiest—
Sony has always been very kind to creative talent, is always willing to take the risk. And the other studios that looked at this movie said it's a movie that's going to cost $60 million that is about a bunch of guys talking about baseball— for 90% of the film. It's going to have zero international sales. If you're not into baseball, there's no romance, it's not going to have any business. And they did the numbers.
And what do we think of that? Do we think, well, finally the industry is sobering up, or do we think, oh my God, it's the end of the quality adult film?
If you're a moviegoer who likes smart movies and who likes baseball, if you're somebody like me, I think it's really sad. If you're a shareholder in Sony Pictures, you would have to say maybe it was a better idea that they swallowed $10 million than $850 by making the movie and watching it tank.
I think what we're seeing is one of those power shifts back to the studio and away from the talent. The track record of the major stars has been very spotty in the past few years. That's diminished their clout, which was extremely high for a while. You know, stars could ask for anything, get anything. You know, I remember the days when it was standard to see $20 million, you know, against, you know, 20% of the back end.
Right, which is a lot.
Which is a lot and makes it very, very hard for the studio to have a profitable film. Now the studios have absolutely asserted their hegemony with, again, as you said, the exception of Will Smith. There are no stars who really have huge clout. Curiously, there are still two or three directors who have that. It's the power of the machine, the corporate machine.
Mm-hmm.
The power of pure numbers.
John?
I would add one thing to that. I also think it's the rise of the audience. I mean, movie critics might not have liked the Transformers sequel, but the audience did. And I think you're seeing that we live in a day where audiences will go see a movie on Friday night, and by the time they come out, they're texting their friends. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're putting something on their Facebook, their MySpace page.
Right.
So you can pay Eddie Murphy $20 million, and you can put him in Imagine That. And by Friday night, the audience has said, this movie's terrible.
You're dead. We'll be back in a minute to talk more about changes happening now in the movie business with Stephen Galloway of The Hollywood Reporter and John Horn of The LA Times. We'd love to know what you think. Write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com or go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. While talking with Stephen Galloway of The Hollywood Reporter and John Horn of the LA Times, the new Transformers movie came up time and again. You know, that movie that critics called big, fat, dopey, noisy, pedestrian, infantile, inane, and a nightmare, and went on to make $450 million in its first week? Here's John Horn.
I think what you're seeing on movies like Transformers and big budget productions going forward is the studios are going to make complicated deals where the studios have to get their money back before they pay out the talent. And I think the talent and the talent agents are realizing that the days where they get paid $20 million up front are gone. Maybe they'll forsake that $20 million for a larger percentage of the film's profits, like Michael Bay does, so that once the studio makes its money back, Michael Bay is going to get a ton of money.
Right.
Now, if the movie fails, he's not going to be rewarded as well. And I think you're going to see the studios insisting to the town, to the creative talent, that they have to make those kinds of deals.
Right.
Because it's insane. It's an insane, unsustainable business for the studios to assume $200 million in risk, be paying out, you know, 25 cents out of every dollar when they haven't recouped their own costs. And I think they're going to stop doing that.
Steven?
And that's the model that Spielberg had always followed of having a great investment in the back end. I agree with you that the studios are going to be able to essentially call the deals. What I think is interesting about Transformers, especially as we compare it to The Dark Knight, that people are going to look at these films and really analyze who the audience was. Because when Dark Knight came out, which just beat Transformers at the box office, it had great critical response. It had enormous enthusiasm that drew many different types of audiences in. Here comes Transformers that's not getting that kind of response, and it's still delivering huge numbers. So who's going to see it? And the studio's going to look at those numbers and say, this is the audience we have to deliver to. And unfortunately,
it's the kids.
It's the kids.
It's,
and
it's not just the kids. It's the families. I think that's what's really remarkable about the performance of Transformers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think 15% of the audience was Latino. And Latino families obviously don't make up 15% of the population, but they do account for a huge amount of business for family films. I mean, I went to see the movie, and there were a lot of parents with, you know, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds.
Mm. But if that's true, that's very interesting, because I would have thought that the audience was largely young
males.
Males.
But it's
almost 50-50.
But there's a lot of talk about the cyclical nature of the movie business and what kind of movies work and what kind of movies don't. But we'll start with Stephen. Is the absolute way of doing business really permanently changing here?
I don't know if it's permanently changing. There is a shift where the deals will become smaller. The studios will want to protect themselves. But I think the more important shift is actually away from a certain type of film. And there is that, at the moment, diminution, but eventually, I think, disappearance of those quality films that have a reasonable budget and that are sort of done to get Oscars, but also done because actors like Sean Penn want to be in them. This, to me, is reminiscent of the 80s, when the studios really abandoned sort of what we think of as quality films. And the studios' move away from that type of film led to the power of Miramax. This feels like that, where the studios are completely abandoning that type of business. Well, will we in the next 2 or 3 years see the rise of other companies, new Miramaxes, to fill that gap?
And well, it's kind of weird. We just saw Slumdog make a fortune. And why is it that message not – is that message lost, John?
It is mostly lost, because if Warner Brothers really believed in the movie, they would have stuck to it and released it. I mean,
well,
they were once considering –
Searchlight proved them wrong.
That's
though.
True. But this is a major studio that once considered releasing Slumdog Millionaire straight to video. So, I mean, the beauty of a Slumdog Millionaire is that it encourages everybody else to take that kind of gamble.
But actually, it doesn't encourage the studios, because what the studios know is – this was one of those unlikely hits. This was getting the lottery ticket that wins. You can't create a system that can reproduce that.
I agree, but you can look at the $2.5 million acquisition cost that Fox Searchlight paid and the $100 million plus gross that it generated and say, even if we don't understand how to do that, we need to be able to understand.
Well, you
how
can
to
look at
that.
It and envy it.
But are they doing that, John?
That's the other problem with specialized film, is that the studio-owned divisions look for such incredible returns from these films that most films can't pass it. And I think that's also going to hit what films get distributed nationally. I want to go back to something Stephen said. I think what you're seeing is a complete reexamination of every principle that the studios used to follow. I mean, Universal a year ago, a Steven Spielberg, Peter Jackson movie, Tintin.
Right.
They said at $130 million with a lot
of
profit, we're not going to make that movie. The idea of a studio saying no to Steven Spielberg and Peter Jackson together would have been unthinkable. And now they're saying no. I think if Universal could set the clock back, they probably wouldn't have made Russell Crowe's State of Play.
Definitely would.
They might not have made Julia Roberts' Duplicity. You know, Julia Roberts, she hasn't made a movie in a couple of years. Yes, we'll make that movie. And I think now the studios are saying, well, should we? Would we? I mean, Warner Brothers didn't used to make R-rated comedies. They wanted to make family-friendly four-quadrant movies. They made The Hangover. They made Observe and Report. So I think you're starting to see studios that used to not make a certain kind of movie make those kinds of movies.
I agree. What's interesting here is also that the people in these positions, Tom Rothman at Fox, Amy Pascal at Sony, they know film very well. They love good films. And yet they're prepared to make some very, very bad films because they've become businessmen. They've become executives.
Well, the one studio that we haven't talked about, and except that insofar as you were bringing up Tom Rothman, Stephen, was Fox. And Fox is a standout, right? They've had long-standing reputation as the cheapest, toughest studio to deal with. And are they a model for what's going to come next?
Yes, they're a model in many ways. First of all, on a human level, they're a model in the sense that Tom Rothman, who was at Searchlight, who started off being connected with specialty films, has understood you move away from that, you deliver to the lowest common denominator, and you can be very successful doing that. So on that level, he's a model for other executives. He's also a model because, as we all know, he doesn't have great relations with the great artist directors who really stamp their films. And so what? He's done terrifically well.
Now, John, let me just run that question by you. Do you think Fox is a model for the way studios need to run?
I think what Fox learned a year ago when their movies were not only critically thrashed but did incredibly badly at the box office, I think Fox has always kind of worked from the backwards, saying, here's our release date, here's our marketing campaign, let's make a movie to fit it. And I think they realized playability meant more than they thought it would.
Playability meaning?
Meaning, is the movie any good? Do people come out of the theater saying, this is a film we want to see?
Right.
There was a streak that our newspaper chronicled very well, where they didn't have a movie for months on end that got a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, and that hurt them. But I think what they have done is now admitted, I think internally, that the movies have to be better than they've been. So in some ways, if they start making better movies, that is a model to the rest of the town.
If you had to just sum it up as a short pitch, as a high concept pitch, what is happening to the industry, to the movie industry right now? And who wants to go first? Stephen, okay.
What's happened to the business now is the rise of the studio machine, where directors, stars, writers, agents have lost all power against the force of this corporate entity. A secondary thing that's happening is the rise of concept filmmaking, and along with that, the disappearance of sophisticated adult filmmaking that can't deliver the extraordinary numbers that we're seeing with Transformers. So what we're going to see is enormously powerful studios making enormously bad movies.
And John?
My pitch is that the old idea of what is and is not a movie star has changed completely. It's not Russell Crowe. It's not Julia Roberts. It's not Will Ferrell. It's J.J. Abrams directing Star Trek. It's Michael Bay directing Fighting Robots. It is Daniel Radcliffe playing Harry Potter. That the idea of what a star is, what a sellable idea is, has changed fundamentally.
Stephen Galloway is executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter, and John Horn is a staff writer for the LA Times. Thank you guys so much for coming in and sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Darby Maloney is our associate producer. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or comments about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program and comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button from our new media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters, and we'll see you next week on Business.